Welcome. I'm Tom Pelton of the Environmental Integrity Project. We are a 21-year-old nonprofit organization based in Washington, D.C. and Austin, Texas, dedicated to enforcing environmental laws and strengthening public policy to protect public health and the environment. Today, we are releasing our new report, Oil's Unchecked Outfalls, Water Pollution from Refineries, and EPA's Failure to Enforce the Clean Water Act. You can find the report on our website at www.environmentalintegrity.org. We're going to have four speakers, then take questions from reporters. Our first speaker will be Eric Schaefer, Executive Director of the Environmental Integrity Project and former Director of Civil Enforcement at EPA. Next, from Port Arthur, Texas, we'll have John Beard, Executive Director of the Port Arthur Community Action Network. Then from Houston, Kristen Schlemmer, Legal Director of the Bayou City Waterkeepers. From San Francisco, we'll have Sejal Choksi Chu, Executive Director of San Francisco Baykeeper. And finally, our closer, Mitch McNeil, Chair of the Surfrider Foundation Chicago Chapter. I'd also like to highlight the presence on this call of the Environmental Integrity Project researchers, who are responsible for the months of hard work and detailed analysis that went into the study, including Research Manager Kira Burkhart, Analyst Louisa Markow, Research Director Courtney Bernhardt, and Senior Water Quality Attorney Meg Parrish. They will all be on the line and available for questions from reporters at the end. And now we'll have our director, Eric Schaefer. Go ahead, Eric.
Thanks, Tom, and thank you all for joining us today. I want to welcome our guests on the call, and I also want to express my appreciation to the EIP team that worked so hard to put this report together. Oil refineries discharge about a half a billion gallons of wastewater to our rivers, our streams, our lakes, our estuaries every day. That's enough to fill more than 750 Olympic-sized swimming pools every day. So we examined monitoring reports and other public records to try to find out what kind of contaminants lurk in that wastewater, learn how much of those contaminants refineries dump into our public waterways, and then find out whether and how this pollution was regulated. So let's start with some of the key pollutants, and I'm going to give you the numbers for how much refineries discharged in 2021. And again, we're talking about what goes into the water. 60,000 pounds of selenium and more than 10,000 pounds of nickel. Those are heavy metals, highly toxic to fish and other critters in minute quantities that are measured in parts per billion. So these are particularly dangerous pollutants. And you'll hear from Choksi Chu later about what that selenium from San Francisco area refineries has already done to the aquatic life in the San Francisco Bay. Once these metals get into the water column and start accumulating in sediment, it's almost too late. They're nearly impossible to remove. Selenium discharges from coal plants, to give you some perspective, finally have to meet federal national wastewater standards. No such limits apply to refineries, although some of them dump far more selenium into our waters than coal plants do. So what else? In 2021, refineries also discharged an estimated 15.7 million pounds of nitrogen compounds that fill up waterways with algae blooms and weeds that suck the oxygen out of the water that fish and other aquatic species need to survive. This oxygen-starving pollutant is the primary reason we have a dead zone near the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico that covered more than 6,000 square miles in 2021. Also in 2021, 1.6 billion pounds of chlorides, sulfates, and other total dissolved solids These are basically salts that can harm aquatic life, corrode drinking water intakes, and increase the cost of treating that water to basically keep the salt out of it and make it drinkable. Amazingly, none of these pollutants that I just named are subject to national wastewater treatment standards that EPA has on the books. And I'll explain more of that later. But first, the totals I just gave you don't include any of those contaminants that are released in ways that bypass wastewater treatment systems, stormwater runoff, for example, or spills. I also want to make clear that our data comes from 81 refineries that we could identify that actually discharge directly to public waterways. There are several dozen more that flush their waste through publicly owned wastewater treatment plants that don't necessarily do a very good job keeping industrial pollutants out of the wastewater they discharge. So we think we're understating the problem. And then finally, in addition to the pollutants that I just named, refineries also discharge millions of pounds of other contaminants, cyanide, oil and grease, sediment, and other heavy metals like arsenic and mercury. This is a high polluting industry discharging large volumes of wastewater. They have a negative impact on water quality. At least 56 of the 81 refineries that we studied dump their waste into rivers, lakes, estuaries that don't meet federal water quality standards. 44% discharge to waters that flow through or around communities that are primarily people of color, African American, Latino, sometimes Asian American, or that struggle to get by on low incomes. And we'll have John Beard on hopefully later to tell you what that pollution means to the majority African American community in Port Arthur, Texas, a historic refinery town. The Clean Water Act, way back in the 1970s, required the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to set nationwide limits based on the best available wastewater treatment methods that were available at the time to limit the discharge of pollutants from refineries and certain other industry categories. Those standards were not supposed to be static. They were supposed to be improved over time as treatment methods improve. I mean, just to sort of bring it down to earth, nobody thinks that a rotary phone, which we still had in the 1970s, is the best available technology for making a phone call in 2023. That same thinking was applied in the Clean Water Act. As treatment methods improve, the standards need to get tighter. And that's just not me saying that. A great decision, in our view, in 2019 from the U.S. Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, the most conservative appellate court we have, had three judges join in saying, and I'm quoting, "The Act, the Clean Water Act, mandates a system in which, as available pollution control advances, pollution discharge limits will tighten." And they said that about three times in the opinion. Two out of the three judges in that case, including the author of the opinion, were appointed by former President Trump. Now, in some cases, state agencies have added a few limits that apply to a few pollutants that aren't covered by the weak federal standards that date back more than 40 years. But our analysis shows those are frequently violated and only sporadically enforced. So lack of compliance is another problem. Going back to refineries, between 1982 and 1985, EPA did set some standards to limit just 10 pollutants, none of the ones we mentioned earlier, 10 pollutants based on the wastewater treatment methods that were basically available in the late 70s. But those standards, now 40 years old, almost 40 years old, don't include any limits for selenium, nickel, total nitrogen, chlorides, sulfates, and many other pollutants that, you know, we don't have time to list. So, for example, the statute way back then in the late 70s directed EPA to include limits for 65 toxic pollutants. The rules EPA adopted in the early 1980s apply to just two, chromium and phenols. That's it. The other 63, not limited. Now, those Reagan-era standards have never been revised as the law mandates to reflect improvements in treatment technology that have emerged over the last four decades. Meanwhile, the average refinery is twice the size of the refineries that were around in the early 80s when these standards were set. And so we have more pollution getting pushed through aging wastewater treatment plants that were designed around 1970s technology. I'm old enough to remember how bad pollution was, water pollution was, in this country before the Clean Water Act came along more than 50 years ago, promising that our public waterways would be fishable and swimmable within a few short years. We've long passed that deadline. We've seen real improvements since then, but our progress has stalled. Based on the most recent state surveys, about half our rivers and lakes, and at least a quarter of our estuaries are so polluted, they aren't healthy for fish and aquatic life, and they're not safe for swimming or other recreational activities, or they don't meet either standard. These are not, to put it simply, the fishable and swimmable waters we were promised. Many reasons why we've fallen short, but at least one of them is our failure to require refineries and other industrial dischargers to use the modern treatment systems we have today that could reduce the volume and toxicity of the contaminants they release to waters that, after all, belong to the public and not private companies. What are we asking for? No more than what the Clean Water Act has required since the 1970s. We ask EPA to comply with the law, rise to the occasion, and write new standards based on the more advanced treatment systems we have in this century, instead of the ones we should have left behind in the last one. Thank you, Tom, and I'll return my time.
Thank you. That's Eric Schaefer, Executive Director of the Environmental Integrity Project, former Director of Civil Enforcement at EPA. Our next speaker is from Port Arthur, Texas, John Beard, Executive Director of the Port Arthur Community Action Network. He worked for decades at a refinery in Port Arthur. He knows them inside and out. Go ahead, John.
Thank you, Tom. Good afternoon, everyone. As Tom mentioned, I'm John Beard. I'm the founder and CEO of the Port Arthur Community Action Network, an environmental, social justice, and community development organization here in Port Arthur, Texas. For those of you who don't know where that is, we're about 100 miles due east of Houston on the Texas-Louisiana border. In other words, when you look at the weather channel or weather map and you see where Texas and Louisiana and the Gulf of Mexico meet, that's Port Arthur. And we're in what I like to consider or call the belly of the beast, where everything that's happening in petrochem expansion and petrochemicals is happening here. Pipelines, LNGs, the largest petroleum refiner in the country, Motiva, is located here, as well as Total's refinery, Valero, and numerous other chemical plants and other treatment facilities. And in my experience here, having lived here a considerable amount of time and worked in industry for close to 40 years, I've seen what happens on a very up close and personal scale. Many of you probably remember Hurricane Harvey that hit in 2017. And Harvey dumped over 60 inches of rain in this area. And what I observed in my goings about in the community was that a large number of these refiners were dumping their wastewater, their in-plant wastewater, into the storm drain systems of the city of Port Arthur. Matter of fact, Total Refinery was fined for over, or cited, I'm not sure if they were fined, but they were cited for dumping over 100 million gallons of untreated in-plant water into the Neches River, which goes into Sabine Neches Waterway and into Lake Sabine, a prime fishing spot here on the Gulf Coast. But in the case of Motiva Refinery, my organization and I found that they were also dumping water into some of the major tributaries here on a consistent basis. And what was even worse was the fact that a lot of this water was contaminated by oil, because you could see the sheen on the water. Now, let me give you a little background on that as someone who worked in the plant. You might wonder, as Eric said earlier, what's actually in that water? Well, basically, whatever's in that plant that leaks from a pipe or leaks from a piece of equipment and gets into either the soil or on the concrete pad and is washed down into their sewer system, and it goes through untreated because there's very limited treatment that's done. To my experience, we only check for, as Eric said, pH and turbidity, and maybe some heavy metals like chromium, maybe. But that's it. And the rest of it is returned back into those same waterways, the same waterways where we hunt, fish, recreate, and many people make their lives from. So whatever's in the plant gets in that water. That 100 million gallons of in-plant water from Total got into the waterways of Port Arthur. And in the case of Motiva, their discharge, and I have pictures of which I maybe at some point like to share with you, to show you even today from the rain activity you all probably heard about, the thunderstorms and tornadoes that came through this very area just 2 days ago, that this water is deposited into what's called Main Canal B. Main Canal B drains a lot of Southeast Texas through the Alligator Bayou Pump Station. And if you Google Earth and look at this in those areas of Motiva and Valero's refinery where this is, Alligator Bayou Pump Station pumps into the Alligator Bayou cutoff, which goes into the Sabine Nature's Waterway, which goes into the Gulf of Mexico. So now, whatever you have that's in that water, that's in the plant, that is leached into the soil, and now with the water coming there, it's become liberated, and it's a part of that water that's being pumped out. And it's being pumped into the city system, which goes into that same waterway and into the Gulf of Mexico. Think about that next time if you're on the Gulf Coast in this area and you go swimming or you go boating or you hunt and fish and take that home to consume for yourself and your family. That is how we become hurt and oppressed by it. And I was hearing it mentioned earlier, what effect does it have on a largely minority BIPOC community such as Port Arthur? I like to look at it in this way. They don't build these facilities in Beverly Hills or River Oaks or Madison Avenue. They don't build them in communities of affluence that have the way and means to go about seeking justice and correction for what essentially is an injustice that's perpetrated on people in those communities. They are, in the words of one of the captains of industry I heard say once, they take the path of least resistance. The people who can ill afford and can't fight back. Those are the communities that have been oppressed. So now you not only have that oppression by industry in the waterways, but even the city of Port Arthur contributes its share because of a crumbling infrastructure system here. The system that we have to treat municipal wastewater gets overloaded due to infiltration of the system because of high rainfall amounts, which, by the way, Port Arthur is one of the top 10 in terms of rainfall in the country. And that water gets into the system, and when it's overloaded, when they don't have the capacity to treat it all, what do? They dump it, and it goes where? Into those same waterways and tributaries. So you have municipal waste and contamination and pollution, as well as industrial. And then to top it all off, the very air we breathe is contaminated too. So it is oppression from within and without. These communities are adversely affected, and it manifests itself in the health issues that people have here. Respiratory issues, but now if you're eating the shellfish and the fish that come from there or swimming in these toxic waters, other illnesses and diseases may come about that you had no knowledge of, simply because people don't know. So I commend EIP and Eric and others for the work that they're doing to highlight this problem and bring it to the attention of people. It makes my work here in the community a lot easier because I'm able to go and talk and give facts and figures and show what industry is doing. Many people say that we need the jobs and we need all of these products that they produce. And that's true.